This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to www.ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi, I'm here with Philip Shaw from Philip Shaw Wines. How are you, Philip?
Oh, great, Chris. You're welcome.
Excellent. We're up in sunny Orange. Well, not quite sunny today.
No, it's actually raining. I've been away overseas the last 2 weeks, but we've had a reasonable amount of rain over the last 2 weeks, which is nice after really 3 or 4 years of drought. It was a soft winter. We didn't have that much rain. Since then, it's been raining on and off. So everything's looking very lush and green.
Yeah, growing. I've noticed it's really green. It's not that sort of dried out Aussie look that you're normally used to. We're going to be talking about orange today. Why is it called orange?
Well, I think some guy from England did that. A lot of our towns around here are named after dukes and that of European origin. So that's the reason. We're certainly too cool to grow oranges here.
Known really for stone fruit, really, wasn't it?
More palm fruit. Apple's the main fruit here. And to some degree, cherries. Cherries have become quite strong over the last few years, mainly because there's a fairly big export market. And this is the latest region in Australia, besides Tasmania, southern Tasmania, and it fits nicely with Chinese New Year. So, in fact, a lot of cherries get exported for Chinese New Year, and being a lake region, we are, it fits perfectly.
A lake region?
Lake, you know, the fruit.
Oh, the fruit ripens late.
Yeah.
Yeah, lake region. Okay. What's the defining thing about orange? Because, well, just so people know where it is, you're, what, 3 hours inland from Sydney over the Blue Mountain Range?
Yeah, we're really due west of Sydney. To be in the orange region as far as grape growing, you've got to be above 600 metres, and the grapes generally are grown between 750 and up to over 1,000 metres.
And what does the altitude do to the wines?
It's a very cool region. We've been once over 100 degrees Fahrenheit, 38 degrees centigrade. That was in 2002, so it's very cool, cool winters. It just gives us a better window for longer ripening and better flavour qualities, more vibrant fruit characters.
More acidity coming through in the wines?
Yeah, definitely. We rarely have to add acid.
A lot of people talk about the soils, you know, it's just beside an old volcano which chucked out a bit of basalt.
Yeah, that has some inputs on the style too. I chose this property because it's really the break between basalt and going into shaley soils. So you've got some good depth of soil, but shaley, limestone. The whole area used to be a big inland sea, or I don't know what it was inland at that stage. It certainly was a sea, and there's 600 metres of limestone under the whole of the region. So it's very impacted by all sorts of soils and that.
What would you say the main soil is? Is it just a real... And how deep is that limestone? Do the grapes get to the limestone?
Yeah, they do. Our topsoil is red and it looks like it's volcanic, but in fact it isn't. Along the western side generally of the Great Divide, which runs north-south and along the east coast of Australia, topsoil is generally wind-blown soil from the central Australia, and probably 150, 200 millimetres of the topsoil is that fairly low acidity, wind-blown, red, very friable soil.
Okay, and then you've got the limestone.
And then we go into red, lovely red friable soil.
What's friable soil?
Oh, it allows the water to, it's very crumbly and allows the water to penetrate through.
Okay, high porosity.
Yeah, it's perfect soil for growing grapes.
And what sort of grapes are you growing up here?
Well, being a new region, or relatively new region, the vine's been planted since early 80s in this region. You don't know, so you start with everything and then work out what works.
Process elimination.
And then you eliminate, that's right. You graft over or pull out what you don't think's working so well. And that was my intention. My favourite varieties are Chardonnay and Pinot Noir, and that's why I selected. I've had a lot of close association with Burgundy in the past from France. And so that was my intent, but I planted other varieties, in fact, because I was after the best wines, not necessarily close my mind to what else is available. And you do all your research and that and come up with the figures, but all the things we know, there's a lot more we don't know. So what and how they all combine, you're not sure. So the best thing is to plant a reasonable amount of each better known varieties or varieties you're interested in and see which worked out, and that's what I've done.
And what do you think's working out?
Well, carbonate's a bit cool here, except in a warm year. We're trying to overcome that by a lot of work in the vineyard and cropping extremely low. So I'm not sure yet on that. Pinot is showing huge promise, gets better every year. Chardonnay and Shiraz are the ones looking best.
Shiraz, right?
What do you Shiraz. Call it? People often pick me up what I'm calling. I think, well, I don't know what I'm
Shiraz,
calling.
Shiraz, Syrah, Shiraz.
Anyway, that's what I call it. Depends on the aspect, really. If we're on an easterly aspect or a southerly aspect, it's quite cool. And, you know, being reasonable slopes on the outer ridge of a vineyard, it's quite suited for varieties like Pinot Noir and Sauvignon Blanc. While the northerly aspects for the later ripening fruit, like Cabernet and Shiraz and Merlot to some degree.
Yeah, because we're in the southern hemisphere, the northern is facing the equator, the warmer side, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the warmer side.
And northern hemisphere, it's the south slopes.
So, yeah, it's opposite. So, yeah.
Okay, so how many grape growers are up here?
It's about 50 now.
15 or 50?
50 growers.
Oh, quite a few.
So it's scattered quite widely here, and you got to drive around. And the same with wineries, there's 15 wineries now, but they're very scattered around, and so you don't drive up one road and find them all, no.
Me and a mate of mine were up here, we were driving around trying to find the vineyards, and they were all over the place.
Yeah, I mean, they vary in size from quite small. The biggest vineyard's 500 hectares.
Well, it's still a good size, though.
Yeah, no, there's quite a number of quite reasonable-sized vineyards here.
Originally, you did some work for Rosemount. You were the head winemaker there?
I was in charge of production of Rosemount, and then South Corp after that.
Yep, okay. And then you packed it in to come here. They're available in the UK, aren't they? Well, they've got a distributor there.
They're limited availability. They will become available reasonably soon, more freely.
We tasted a reasonable range of your wines just before we did the show. We tasted, Sauvignon Blanc? Three different Chardonnays.
A Pinot and a Shiraz Viognier.
Yep, so quite a mixture there. I also did a wee bit of tasting before we came in here, and I noticed the first winery I went to, the wines I thought were actually quite flabby for what I was expecting. You know, people talk about cool climate, I expect wines with loads of acidity in them. And I was a bit worried that maybe that wasn't quite the cool climate that people have been talking about. But your wines have got a lot of zesty freshness to them.
I think it depends a lot on the winemaker and when they picked them, and that they may have been picked late, very late. I mean, even very cool regions seem to be able to get fruit ripe over the last few years. We've been in severe drought, and that would have had some impact on those people.
Why would the drought have caused the problem?
They're ripening a lot earlier, and with low crops, you're getting them ripening more during the warmer period.
Oh, the vines have got less cropping because of the dryness.
Extremely low cropping, some of them.
Yep.
It didn't seem to affect us so much. We crop very low anyway, so the vines weren't stressed anyway. So our aim is to crop around 5 tonnes a hectare, so it wasn't that stressed, and I think that's probably why we're not suffering from that. They may have picked them a lot later than we do. We try and get the fruit to show its vibrant fruit characters at a fairly low BOMA, and that's by cropping low that's achieved. And we do a lot of work in the vineyard by pulling leaves off and pulling shoots off and pulling bunches off. And I think that achieves during those really stressed, hard times, putting that effort in, you're rewarded from it.
You were talking when we were tasting the rosé that the rosé is dry, which is quite nice. I'm not a big fan of sweet rosés, but dry rosé. But you said it was quite heavily oxidised, which is a bit unusual because the Aussies like to, you know, almost reductive winemaking as a general rule. Why did you go down the oxidative process for your rosé?
Because I don't generally like the Aussie rosés. red fruit, you always have a bit of tannins there, and you can approach that different ways. Some varieties like Grenache are fairly low in that tannin, so it's not such a problem. Other varieties, they've got a reasonably harsh tannin, and by oxidising you remove that tannin and also stabilise the colour, which is another important factor. Initially, the juice looks brown, and it's done at a juice stage, but after that, that colour drops out, unstable colour, and the wine stays much stabler. Rosés tend to have a relatively short life, but by doing this, you have two purposes. One's to stabilise and lengthen the life of wine, but also to give a much softer palate, and that wine's totally dry. It's no sweetness.
Yeah, a lot of people, they add sugar just to soften out, hide the tannins with the sugar.
Yeah, and that makes sense if you're making that style.
What's the grapes you've used?
Merlot's the main variety in it, but also Shiraz, Pinot, and a little bit of Cab Franc.
The Pinot, quite light in style, you know, almost Burgundian and different. I've been travelling through Otago drinking a bit of Pinot there, and yeah, you know, quite heavy, those Pinots, whereas yours is back to a very light style, quite floral. What are you trying to achieve there?
Well, that's the way Pinot, to me, is the way it should be. Pinot's an elegant variety, and it's quite powerful perfume, florals, and that's what I'm after. I think if you aim to make a Shiraz from Pinot and the style, a lot of Pinots look more like Shiraz. They do Pinot, and they pick very late, high alcohols. I think you've lost the charm of Pinot, and I see Pinot needing to be light and elegant, and these wines will age extremely well. Crop extremely low. We leave on skins a long time, but we don't pick ripe. So that's the style I believe Pinot should be.
You were talking, you had a couple of problems with the Pinots early on with some eucalyptus trees, and also sort of had them facing the wrong way. Do you want to comment on sort of what you've had to do as you've learnt how best to grow the wines in Orange?
Yeah, it's coming. It's how to adapt to the site we're on. Orange goes from 600 metres up to over 1,000, as I mentioned, and span is over 4 weeks growing. So it's like moving from southern France to northern Europe, in fact. But with Pinot, we found I planted initially on northerly face.
Warm face, yeah.
And also have clones of D5V12, which is an old clone. The Swiss clone, chosen because of its resistance to botrytis and other rots, because they get a lot of rain at the wrong time. Well, what we found, that was fine, but that wasn't necessarily a big problem for us. It can be a little problem some years, but the wines weren't that great. In Australia, because we don't only limited areas have phylloxera, it's very hard to get new clones into Australia. And most of what was considered good clones weren't available in Australia, so I just had to use what we could get.
Yep.
But once better clones came available, I then grafted over and we moved to the southern face, which was cooler. So it was some of Pinot got grafted over twice and then ended up being grafted to Shiraz because it was the wrong aspect. But yeah, that's all about being in a new area. You've got to be willing to change and
bit adapt. Pricey, though.
Yeah, very expensive. I'm not growing grapes here to make money. You know, that's crazy philosophy. No, try and make styles I want.
Yeah, okay. What do you think the wines are to look out for in Orange in the future? We've talked a little bit about the Chardonnays.
I think Chardonnay, it all depends on where you're located. I haven't got Riesling planted here, but one of the vineyards got some very shaley soil. And I think growing a superb Riesling, very Moselle Germanic style, very light, elegant, very limey, great wine. Pinot, you need to be high. Merlot, we're just coming to grips with. We've only got one clone at the moment. We're starting to get new clones, and I think that'll be a great area for Merlot. One problem with Merlot throughout the world is, in fact, that Merlot is a very poor setter, very uneven cropping. But we find we can get perfect cropping, perfect set every year.
Was that, do you not have wind or rain issues?
Yeah, we have all those issues, but I think because we are very high up, we've got a very good UV, and that overcomes that problem for set.
You mentioned UV. A lot of people say that the UV puts stress on the vine, and as a result, you quite often either land up with thicker skins, which is what they sort of say about Argentinian wines, and some people reckon that New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc has that sort of intensity, maybe because of the big UV hole that appears over New Zealand. Do you, do you think UV is an important part of orange?
Yeah, I believe it is. I mean, you go to most high regions of the world and look at flowers and they always have a real intensity of colour. And I think it's the same with orange, it's a real intensity of colour. The idea of stress is rubbish. I mean, vines don't get stressed through UV. They get stressed by heat. We're not hot. We don't get sunburned very, you know, in the whites, we don't get sunburned. We use dappled light. We carefully pick our fruit so we end up with dappled light.
What, but so you've got a bit of leaf covering the grapes?
Slightly, and I think any region, I've noticed people totally denude the vine. I think it's probably a method we should show some countries. I think it's a bit of a torture. I don't know why people do that. Certainly I can understand the vine being open and having sunlight, but not being to a point where all the fruit just standing out there in the raw sun, no. And I think it's more affected by heat than it is by UV.
What do you think UV has influences the wine to?
Well, a whole plant's growth depends on UV. That's what, and most areas where it's got a lot of UV, it's also got a lot of heat. But in a very high area, you've got a lot of UV, but you don't have a lot of heat. And to a fair degree, that's ideal for a plant, for growth. And you notice here, if you do get rain and that and everything's ideal, you do get the growth and you do get the colour in the fruit. You get a lot of intensities. No, I don't agree with that theory. I just think it's heat's the main problem. And you take those three Bordeaux reds, to me, not my favourite vintage because they've been overstressed. I don't think they've been...
too hot.
I don't think it was the heat as much as the stress.
Or maybe even water because they're not allowed to irrigate.
Yeah, I'm sure that's a problem.
Okay, then, Philip, I think we'll wrap it up there. Thanks very much.
Fine. Thanks, Chris.